Honestly, show me a culture in the world that can raise a barn in 5 days, aside from the Amish. Hard work, community, those two things. There is no other culture. And I have traveled extensively, and I have yet to find a culture that works as hard as the Amish.
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs, boutique hotels, and hospitality brands, and the hosts, operators, and entrepreneurs who have brought them to life. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll meet the military veterans, the retired flight attendants, tech entrepreneurs, the school teachers, the single moms, and the real estate investors who are all, in their own unique ways, shaping the future of travel and hospitality. Discover how these visionaries from all over the world have built chic cabins in the mountains, designed bohemian bungalows on the beach, erected eclectic off-grid and nature-immersed escapes, and so much more. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, the internet's best destination for last-minute Airbnb deals. You can subscribe for free at spontaneous.com. And I'm your host, Zach Buzicruz, co-founder and CEO of Spontaneous. All right, friends, enjoy the show. In just a moment, you'll meet Elam King, founder and CEO of Kingly Vacation Rentals, a collection of short-term rentals and soon-to-be motels located across Pennsylvania and Maryland. Elam grew up in the Amish community, and it was here that he learned the importance of discipline, hard work, and craftsmanship. After leaving the Amish community as a young adult, Elam began to learn everything he could about real estate investing. Elam has a knack for dilapidated homes that others have looked over and being able to see how to transform a piece of crap, for lack of a better term, into a piece of gold. This skill set has served him incredibly well as he's grown his portfolio of short-term rentals from 5 to 10 to over 15 over just the last few years. Tune in to hear the story behind how Elam got into hospitality, the metrics he uses to determine whether or not a fixer-upper can be renovated into something truly valuable, why he just bought a motel, and so much more. All right, friends, without further ado, get ready to meet Elam. All right, Elam, we are live. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing awesome, actually. I really am.
Well, it's great to have you on, and we connected a while back, but it's taken a while to have this conversation.
Partially my fault.
a lot my fault.
Okay.
but hey, here we are. We're having this chat, and you're doing some really cool things in the short-term rental space. And I'm really excited to kind of like dive into your story because it's a cool one, and hear a little bit more about how you've approached building your portfolio, building your management company. But one of my favorite questions to ask everybody that comes on the podcast is, if I were to meet you as a 10-year-old and I were to ask you what you wanted to be when you grew up, like, what would you have said? How would you have responded to that question?
I was thinking about that this morning. I wasn't actually quite sure how to answer it because, you know, I grew up Amish, and Amish has a very, you know, more smaller box, so to speak. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just cultures are different.
Yeah.
So it's a much more limited box. However, just thinking back, there was many times when I was like, I would get kind of like these big grand business ideas.
Yeah.
As a 10 or 15 year old. And often my parents went, "Oh, Elam, stop it." But I often thought about a big farm with goats and sheep and different things like that. Actually never thought about hospitality, one, because it wasn't in my realm of, it wasn't in my worldview at that time. That wasn't something you considered.
Yeah.
But yeah. And, so yeah, and just a big farm and different things like that. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, isn't too far from, like, you know, farms days, like, are all the rage right now, right? So there you go. You were headed in the right direction. But hey, I want to circle back on growing up Amish, because that's pretty unique, right? Not everybody has that experience. Like, is there like a, you know, I don't know, like a lesson or two, or like an insight or two you can share on that experience that you think has kind of shaped who you are as an entrepreneur today?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about that all day. I mean, literally, I really could. And I want to say this kind of as a preface to that. So we all are used to our own stories, and we don't often value the power of our own story. And I have been sharing my story more and more with the broader world, so to speak. And the response has been, whoa, what? Tell me more. So I feel like I don't value my own story enough, but I'm valuing it more and more. And I'm honored that people are like, wait, tell me about that.
Yeah.
But you know, what are some things that I have learned, or what are some things to take away? There's a lot of things, but kind of as a post preface.
Yeah. I love it. All the prefaces.
The prefaces. What's a, I guess you would say a postface.
That's good.
But anyway, I am very proud of my background. Sure, I left it when I was in my early 20s, and there were some reasons. But to this day, I still think I am majorly privileged. And there's a lot of things that I'm taking away that have shaped who I am today in good ways. There's some things probably that have shaped me in bad ways, but we all have those things. I mean, if we wouldn't have that, I don't know, what would you call us, angels? I don't know. But definitely something different than our human experience today. But one of those things is I grew up working very hard, always working hard, to the point of where I felt guilty if I wasn't working. I still struggle with that somewhat today, not near like I used to, but just a very, you know, you work hard for a living.
Yeah.
Sometimes I see people kind of get into these things of what can I manipulate to make money? I mean, honestly, I have to learn a little bit to work a bit smarter rather than just harder.
Yeah.
That I did not learn when I was young about working smart or smarter. So there's something you've said about working smarter, but at the end of the day, it's the people who work hard and work well that actually do well long term.
Yeah. I mean, what a cool, those values that you learned as a very, you know, young kid, right? Hard work, presumably like good work ethic.
Correct.
Presumably not just trying to find, like, the Amish aren't particularly known for trying to find like the quickest way to do something, right? The most efficient way to do something.
Not necessarily the easiest way.
The easiest way. Thank you. Yep. Yeah, that's probably better language.
Yeah.
And so here you are, like, in a world, right, to your point, where we're always looking for the easiest way. We're always looking for like a way to get something done as quickly as possible with the fewest resources as possible, even if sometimes it's, you know, not shady per se, but not our best work, right? Like, I think as a society, it's very,
correct,
it's very usual, quite frankly, that people fall into those sorts of patterns. And you grew up in a context that really valued work, right? And really valued great work, right? You think about, I mean, again, I know nothing about the Amish other than, you know, you guys make some freaking incredible furniture, right? And like, I know I've got friends who've got these incredible dining tables that were made in Lancaster, you know, County. And you know, they drove all the way up there with her, and it was a whole process. It was like a 9-month like endeavor, it seemed, for them to get this table. Anyways, so, and I think that that's like just a beautiful testament to like the amount of work and diligence and focus and, quite frankly, care that is put into to the work.
And honestly, show me a culture in the world that can raise a barn in 5 days, aside from the Amish. Hard work, community, those two things.
Yeah.
There is no other culture. And I have traveled extensively, and I have yet to find a culture that works as hard as the Amish.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I believe you. I mean, it's... Again, especially sort of like using the resources and tooling that the Amish do use, right, to get the job done, right, I think is also just a testament to the amount of work that's required when when you don't have access to a lot of the more contemporary ways of doing things. I want to hear a little bit about how this translates to hospitality and short-term rentals. So you decide eventually to leave the Amish community. At what point do you stumble into short-term rentals? Like, what's the story there?
Yeah. What's the correlation? I don't even know that I have a good answer other than, I don't know that I have a good answer, but here's what happened. Yeah. So got married about almost 8 years ago. I have an amazing wife and two awesome kids.
Amazing.
I'll tell another story that kind of ties into this a little bit. So in my late teens, as an Amish person, I was working for this, or in my mid late teens, I was working for this other Amish guy. And what we did is we brought in mostly from Amish people, if not exclusively, we brought in these manure spreaders.
Okay.
And they were filthy and dirty. I mean, literally, maybe they had used them the day before and didn't clean anything.
Oh, God.
Talking about, crap.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved that job. We'd strip these manure spreaders down, and we would rebuild them into a really good product. Honestly, I think they're some of the best in what we were doing. Just speaks again to great Amish quality.
Wow.
Not across the board is that true, but the Amish definitely have the ability to create great products. But anyway, that was one of my, if not my favorite job.
Really?
Turning crap.
What did you like about it?
Turning crap into gold. And I'm serious, so we used a torch to tear these things apart, and talking about burning manure, it was pretty gross, but I loved it.
Wow. Jeez. Okay. I don't think I would love it. what about it was like, why do you think you were so interested? Like, why was this your favorite job? Like, what was interesting about it?
I'm still this way. I get so excited about a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And being
and
able
like
to trend
do.
And what it could do. Yeah. So right now we're actually me and two other people that I partner with. We're like inches close from getting a 32 room hotel under contract.
Wow.
And this hotel is pretty dilapidated. There's holes in the roof. Some of the floor is rotted out, and I'm so excited about it.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I could not be more different. I'm like, when I see a project like that, I'm like, run, like, no, thank you. But like, that's amazing that like you see that, you see the opportunity.
I see the opportunity.
And you dive in. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah. And it's, I realize that most people are going to run, but I look at it, it's like, yes. No competition,
Exactly, no competition. So do you do a lot of the work like yourself? Like for these, I want to talk about your portfolio in a second. And obviously doing a hotel is like next level, but like for the short-term rentals, thus far, like are you doing a lot of that work yourself, or are you partnering with people on it, or what?
Yeah, so am I doing a lot of the work myself? As a bit of humility and self-deprecation, too much. And here's what I mean by that. So I've been telling our team that I can do pretty much anything in the company. I might not be the best at it, but I can do it. I've done housekeeping. Now I'm not good, but I've done it. I've done all of it, and I can do all of it, but to a fault.
Yeah.
So I'm working very hard to like, all right, get out of it, Elam. You're supposed to lead the company. You're supposed to set the vision. Let other people do the work. Yeah. So I'll get in there and swing the hammer. I mean, look, rebuilding manure spreaders and the smell didn't bother me. I'll do the same thing today. that crappy hotel, actually it's a motel, but we're going to transform it in a way that it's a very, very unique product.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going with that, which then back to your original question, how did I get into the vacation rental space? So about a year or shortly after we got married, I'm like, wait, we're renting a property and I want to own my own home, but I want to do it in a way that doesn't cost me anything. So, okay. In other words, house hacking.
House hack, yeah.
You know, how can I turn a piece of real estate into an asset as opposed to a liability? I mean, frankly, if you buy a house and you're paying the mortgage, it really is a liability.
Yeah. Straight out of Rich Dad, Poor Dad right there.
Yeah. So we found this house, a 7-bedroom house, and it was one of the worst foreclosures in the city, Lexor City, to the point where it's like, wait, I think they got the bathroom and the closet mixed up at times. It was bad.
Jeez. Oh, God. Wow. Okay.
I loved it.
You loved it. You loved it. This loved piece it. Of crap this that you loved.
Yep.
And, your wife was like down to move into this? Like she was about it?
Well, then we renoed it.
Okay. Before you moved in.
I don't live in crap. I just enjoy working in it. Two different. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Important clarification there. Okay.
I can work in a pig pen, but I will never live there.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've worked in literal pig pens, right? Have you really? You must have at some point.
That's the next thing to it. Yeah.
Okay. So you have this idea. You want to go turn this house into a true asset, not a liability. So you guys do some reno. You guys end up moving in. And then what? You end up renting out a few of the other bedrooms?
Yeah. So when we moved in, the house wasn't quite done. It was done enough to live in. We had the priority was to finish the space that we can rent out.
Yeah.
Because my wife and I had just finished college. We had both spent significant time overseas. We were not only had a zero net worth, we were a negative net worth.
Yeah.
And I convinced some friends to lend me some money. That's how I made it work.
Wow.
So we moved into the house and we had two rooms.
Okay.
Bedroom and a kitchen. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, we did have a bathroom, except I think when we first moved in, we had to we showered without a shower curtain, but yeah. Anyway, that
really roughing it, man. I mean, like the true like entrepreneurial story, right? Like the grind, the, you know, the living in these like conditions that are absolutely less than ideal, right? But for a dream that you had of a better life.
Yeah. It was not a pig pen, it was an unfinished mansion. There's a difference. Wow. But it was a matter like, it's like, I got to make this work. And the priority was to get Airbnb rolling, or, you know, we threw it on Airbnb and get that rolling. So, yeah. Wow. And so, then eventually we finished out another room and just kept doing stuff at the property. And eventually we had a really nice place to live. We eventually moved out because our youngest son, we have two kids. He's very loud, adorable little kid, but he's very loud. And it, you know, what we did is we closed doors and put up bookshelves. And we had three units, our unit, a small unit, and a bigger unit. It functioned completely like its own unit and it was completely legal, but it was a single family home.
I was at an industry networking event recently with some incredible hospitality entrepreneurs, and there was one topic of conversation that everyone was chatting about. Can you guess what it was? Keep in mind, this was an event with some of the most incredible folks building unique stays, micro resorts, and other unforgettable Airbnbs. So these folks knew what they were doing. These weren't like industry newbies. Any guesses? Can you guess what the hottest topic of conversation was? Well, if you guessed cleaning, you'd be right. You see, it doesn't matter if your average nightly rate is $100 or $1,000, if it's your guest room or the world's most unique treehouse, if the stay isn't clean, your guests aren't going to be happy. And finding the right cleaning team, especially these days, is really tough. But my new friends at Turno help make it easier. Turno is the smartest way to schedule, pay, and find vacation rental cleaners. Think of Turno as an Uber or TaskRabbit for STR hosts. Simply create an account, describe your listing's cleaning needs, and Turno will match you with cleaners near you. And get this, each cleaner's profile is complete with ratings and reviews from other STR hosts, so you know what you're getting into and who you're going to be working with ahead of time, rather than crossing your fingers and praying that your new cleaner meets your expectations. And you can store all of the cleaning preferences that you have in your account that is associated with each of your listings. This ensures a quality cleaning every time. Eterno's auto-scheduling feature syncs to your rental calendar and automatically generates cleaning projects associated with guest check-in and check-out dates to be shared with cleaners. After the cleaning, Eterno can auto-process payments for you. How cool is that? So no more like Venmoing people over, you know, your iPhone. And it gets even better, friends. Eterno offers a simple, affordable pricing for STR hosts of any size. Single property accounts and marketplace users get access to all the platform's tools and features for free. And they make working with your existing teams easy too, with plans as low as just $6 per property per month. There's so much to Eterno, so I want you to take just 5 minutes to explore their offering further at Eterno.com/behind the stays. And the team there is offering Behind the Stays listeners a $150 Amazon gift card after you complete your first turnover before March 31st of 2024. So don't sleep on this, folks. Go to Eterno.com/behind the stays to learn more. So you guys do this, and then at what point does this just give you the confidence then to be like, wow, we could go and we could do this for other homes and we could just build a nice little like portfolio for ourselves, or talk to us about how you go from living there and house hacking to building this portfolio of vacation rental homes that you've built?
Yeah. So real estate brings together just a number of different passions that I have. One is real estate. I've always enjoyed buildings.
Yeah.
It was a bit dormant in my younger years because real estate, I didn't even know the whole concept existed.
Yeah.
You know, sure, my dad owned a farm, but it was like he owned a farm. You know, the whole concept of real estate. But I worked in the trades for years. I used to do roofing. Roofing to office. It's just a very, very, very different life. I still love getting out there, but yeah, I just worked very hard working the trades. So real estate brings together the trades, brings together business. And I also have this like really geeky fascination for software, or technology. Like I didn't know how to turn on a computer when I was 20. But 5 years later, I was helping other people fix their computers. You know, I'm just fascinated by technology. So it brings it all together in the hospitality.
I was going to say, sorry to interrupt you, but I feel like I should have asked you, like, what do you not like? Like, what are you not interested in? What are you not good at? That would have been a better question. Wow.
Okay, here's actually kind of a little bit of a dark secret. I enjoy hospitality, but not the day-to-day of it. I used to enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah.
But like, complaining guests frustrate me.
Yeah.
And I've seen this with entrepreneurs. They're passionate about something, but they're not always the best at it. So it's recognizing, okay, who am I? It's a matter of hiring the right people. So I'm passionate about it, but I don't actually like, just don't make me do the day to day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are also hospitality is multifaceted, right? Like,
of course,
you could be passionate. You could be like, you know, very passionate about the real estate aspect of it, like the growing of a brand of it, right? But then, yeah, like guest communications and turnovers, right? Like, might not get you going, and that's okay because like that, there are other people that are really passionate about that, that take a lot of pride in delivering an incredibly clean product every day, or take a lot of pride in like making sure that guests feel inspired and taken care of and that all of their needs are met. Like that really does it for some people, which is why I think that this business is so cool, because it is so like multifaceted. Yep. So I want to get back to, you know, your next project. So, cause today, like you've taken lots of pieces of crap and you've turned them into really cool vacation rentals. Like, did you kind of just go and like rinse and repeat? And I'm really specifically curious to hear about like lessons that you learned along the way. Like a lot of people listening to this podcast might also be in a position where they're just starting out, or maybe they have, you know, a day job that's in an entirely different context, but they've always been interested in like, hey, what would it be like to take a piece of crap and turn it into something that's Airbnb worthy? Like what are some lessons that you learned as you began to build your portfolio?
Yeah. Well, and just going back a little bit to the history. So we bought this house, and then my brother-in-law was going overseas for a couple of years. And I'm like, well, hey, can we rent the place from you? And then we put on Airbnb. I didn't know the whole concept of Airbnb arbitrage. I was doing it, but didn't know it.
Yeah.
But there's not a whole lot of, all right, So I'm going to give my opinion, take it as an opinion. I don't see a future in arbitrage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's a hot take. Yeah.
Different people have different skill sets and passions. I'm not passionate about arbitrage. So take that with a grain of salt. I'm more passionate about building a portfolio of amazing properties. So did I just rinse and repeat some of it? Some of it, we actually bought properties that all we needed to do was set them up, like furnish them.
Yeah.
We did one recently where we did a little bit of rehab, just kind of more a room or two and button some things up, which was a really, really cool. It's our coolest Airbnb right now, and it's probably the coolest one in the Poconos out of 10,000 listings.
Wow. Wow. We'll have to link to that in the show notes. But and I think this, I think I've seen this property. I think you sent it to me, and it is pretty epic. What's the story there? Like, tell us a story about that place.
Yeah. So and this kind of answers, you know, how did we get to where we are today? So, you know, we were doing the arbitrage in Lancaster City, which is just row homes, you know. You take a week to set them up and you're off to the races. It's easy.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't then, but now it would be. But that's part of growing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And then 2020 hit, and weirdly, I was working for this roofing company as their service manager and their service tech. I was kind of both. And all of a sudden I had no job, and all of our properties were just, the calendar became a ghost town.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, it was a moment, I'm almost tear jerking right now. It was a moment when I was just like, now what?
Yeah.
And here's part of my story with leaving the Amish. I'm a very strong Christian. I'm a very practicing. And so I have a personal relationship with God. And I was a little angry at that moment. And again, I share that story. I understand that people are different places. But for me, it's like, God, so here I've been doing all this stuff. What is it going to do? Just fall apart now? Like, what a way to like misguide me now.
Yeah.
My limited faith, my limited understanding, you know, it was one of the best moments in the company because I'm like, okay, I have nothing else to do right now.
Yeah.
And I sat down in a quiet room all by myself and thought, where do y'all want to be in a couple of years from now? And that's when a more true vision was born for the company. So we were doing these row homes, whatever, economy, Motel 6. I mean, it's more than Motel 6, but an economy product. And I'm like, this is not what I want to do.
Yeah.
And all I'm doing is competing. And I've always been fascinated with blue ocean strategy as opposed to red ocean. Red ocean is competitive. Blue ocean is big, wide open space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different. Yeah. So then now that all leads into this property. It's like, we got to have something more unique. You know, we're on that path. I see people doing much more unique stuff than us. Fine. I'm a little bit jealous, but whatever. Embrace your journey.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Embrace what you can make unique, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And embrace who you are and what you bring, even if it's going to look different than the other person.
Yeah.
But anyway, came across this property and I'm like, I want that property. And I walked the property. I'm like, I want it, but how?
Mm.
Financing it. It's like, but how?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure all my thought processes, but I'm like, well, I can do this and this and this and this, and I could do this. Anyway, he had on the market for 1.8.
Okay.
Actually, let me back up a little bit. So an amazing property and also a very different property. And I'm like, okay, I want the numbers to work, obviously, but I also want the property because it's going to make a statement about who we are. So it's an iconic property for us.
Yeah.
And I've been using it over and over and showing it to investors. Like, look, this is, and they love it. They love it. They love the property. So it's like, wow.
Yeah.
So it was, yes, a business decision, but also a vision decision. So anyway, he had on the market for 1.8. I offered 1.5 and he took it. And I'm like,
okay.
Oh, okay. Sure. I was expecting a little bit of negotiation, but he took it.
Yeah.
But it was a property that no one else wanted, which does just excite me.
Why do you think no one else wanted it?
Different, and it has some problems. Like, I probably have to replace the roof, and actually it's leaking at some spots if it's a hurricane or something. Just, it gets in the cracks.
Yeah.
So it has some problems, and there's just different challenges about it. But
not challenges for someone like you.
I mean, it is. I mean, it costs money, whatever. But I saw the opportunity. I was able to look past the crap and look at the gold. So now it's just managing, like fixing the crap or just managing it. But it's become a cash cow.
Wow.
So anyway, 1.5 off and made it contingent on financing, of course. And the appraisal came in at 0.8. Not 1.8, 0.8. And I'm like, hold on. Am I okay? Like, what am I doing?
What are you doing?
and you know, my realtor, everyone agreed it's just a piece of crap.
Yeah.
I got to turn that piece of crap into gold. Just came to me right now. which we did. So the property that we were buying, 4 acres, 10,000 square feet, 2 pools, indoor and outdoor, 9 bedrooms, just a lot of stuff going. And the comps were that the person used to appraise, 1 acre, 6,000 square feet, 6 bedrooms, no pool. It's like, there just wasn't anything around like
it. Yeah. It's just too different. Yeah.
Too different. Now I'm taking a little bit of risk, because what if something would go sideways? What am I going to do with it?
Yeah.
Now in
not
a year,
not necessarily a home that anyone else, you know, just your casual like home buyer wants to buy.
Right. And I know that, and I knew that, and every once in a while it does keep me up a little bit at night. But I also, I'm willing to go through that because I see the potential. Yeah. Where's it going here?
Well, as you're collecting your thoughts, one of the things that's really interesting.
I got it.
Oh, go ahead.
So anyway, we had a contingent on financing, and so we went back to the seller. It's like, look, I can't come up with $800,000 or whatever it would have to close.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, make me an offer and I'll finance it in first lien position.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay. So we agreed on, he finances 84%.
Okay.
With the 20 year payment plan, but with a 4 year balloon. So in 4 years, I need to refinance. But
is he, like, what? Why do you think he did that? Like, he was just that eager to like get it off.
I think he saw that it doesn't fit most investors.
Yeah,
and he wanted to sell it. And
you were interested.
And I was interested. I mean, I worked hard on that property. I just always trying to find a way to like get to this thing.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is him and I have a good relationship today. He loves what we did on the property.
Wow. Which is amazing, because it could have gone the other way. It could have been like, what did you do? Like, oh my gosh, this is going to fail. Like, I'm going to be out, you know, he's going to default on the loan. Like, you know, it could have absolutely gone south. But how cool that he was impressed by the renovations that you guys did. Right? The way that you brought this crap to life, right? And made it something really beautiful. I'm curious, like, as you sort of just think about this property and other properties, Are there specific things that you look for to determine like when something is just crap and it's gonna remain crap versus when something, hey, this is crap, but like it could be gold? Like, what are some of the things that you look for or determining factors? Because again, I think a lot of people listening to this podcast might be in a similar context, and they might, you've done it like a lot of times at this point. So what do you look for? Like, what are some signals that this is a positive, you know, investment versus some signals that could be like, oh gosh, like run away. Cause again, if you're starting from a place where everything kind of looks dilapidated, right? Even if it's in a good market, if that's your starting point, how then do you sort of like take a fine tooth comb to that to separate like the wheat from the chaff, if you will?
Yeah. It's great, great question. Probably where I start, and I want to seriously emphasize this. I am working out of my skill set, out of who I am. that works for me.
Yeah.
It's not going to work for everyone. Don't try to copy me. Sure, you can learn from me, but don't try to copy me. Yeah. And I say that to myself because there's other people I'm looking at that's like, man. And sometimes I feel myself in kind of a state of inferiority. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Who am I? That really is a huge thing. Who am I? And who's my team? Now I'm building a team around me that they're attracted to my vision.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, you know, my personality is kind of through the whole company, but yeah. So I'm kind of a vision person.
Yeah.
Vision people hate operations, but anyway,
I feel you, man.
Yeah. So, but I will start with, this is often where I start. What can the property become?
Mm.
Not what is it? What can it become? Now, that's harder for some people than others, and I fully respect people who have a hard time with that. In fact, I have a very successful entrepreneur friend in real estate. She says, you know, I cannot look past what's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a spreadsheets person. She's been highly successful. But we're in two different worlds. We kind of admire each other, but we work very differently.
Yeah.
So anyway, I start with where a property could be at. What can this property become? And then it's like, what is it going to take to get there? And does that make business sense?
Yeah.
So I often, you know, when realtors bring their properties, I say, send me comps of a property like that in good condition. Then I'll work backwards. What is it going to take me to get it there? Is it a good purchase or not?
Yeah.
So
that's brilliant. That makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
So like this, this motel that we're looking at, it's red carpet in. It's nothing.
Yeah.
Like I'm not even excited about what it used to be.
Mm.
Now, what attracted me to the property was a number of things. Oh, and this is what makes it very interesting. It's commercially and industrially zoned. It has a bunch of land. It's about 10 acres, about 7 industrial and 3 commercial. The hotel, the motel part is on the 3 acres. But buying the piece all by itself doesn't really make sense. Like there's not much left on the, not much meat left on the bones.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested in industrial because I don't want to figure that out. Like, you know, play to your strengths. If you're going after something new every year, it's like you'll never like play to what you're really good at.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why is no one buying this? It's been on the market for a year.
Yeah.
And the people who want the industrial see the hotel as a liability. They have to push the thing down, work through zoning, blah, 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 blah. It's not much left on the bones.
Yeah.
The hospitality guy like myself is like, well, I don't want to pay for the industrial land in the back. What am I going to do with it? So I'm like, so what's the opportunity? You know, what can I make it? So I was part of a real estate group and I threw it into the real estate group. It's like, hey, I got this deal that I'm looking at. Is someone willing to partner with me on the industrial aspect? So different people came forward and then I joined forces with two guys that are in industrial space. They know the industrial space. They don't know the hospitality.
Wow.
I know the hospitality.
Yeah.
So that's the one piece of it. The other So that's where I saw opportunity. And it's like, here's the opportunity. How do I work backwards to get there? And is it worth it? And we're all excited about the deal. I think there's going to be a lot of meat left on the bones.
Yeah.
So now for the motel, I'm not a Motel 6 guy.
Yeah.
I sleep in them sometimes. But I am more, you know, Hilton, Marriott. That's the type of experience I want to create.
Yeah.
And it's in a very hot location. The air, and there's regulations in that area for short-term rentals. And I'm like, I can buy this. I can fit it into a short-term rental business model.
Yeah.
But how? That's a big thing I'm always asking. Here's what I want to get it to, but how? And is it good business sense?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. I can knock out some walls. I can throw some shipping containers on the top to give it some different appeal and just play with it.
Yeah.
And I actually took it to my designers and I'm like, look, this is what I got. I'm very interested from a business model and real estate. It's like, but is this going to fit into our brand?
Yeah.
And they're like, yes, Elam, here's what we can do. We can do this and this and this. Oh, yeah. So that's, we'll probably get on the contract today or tomorrow.
Wow, dude, that's amazing. Congratulations. Like that is very, very exciting. Last minute cancellations suck. And that's why we built Ping. Ping makes it easy for guests to be notified when their favorite Airbnbs become available. Ping is a simple widget that lives on your website or your direct booking site and allows your fans and followers to sign up and be notified if their preferred dates become available. Here's how it works. Jimmy sees that you're booked the whole month of October, but he wants to be notified if any three-night window in the month becomes available. Jen is a returning guest, and she wants to be notified if any week in June, July, or August becomes available. In a matter of seconds, Jimmy and Jen fill out the simple form, and they will be pinged if the requested dates become available. And as a host, you will immediately get pinged via email with Jimmy and Jen's contact information and requested dates, which enables you to build up your own database of guest email addresses. Ping is what the best Airbnb hosts use to maximize bookings. You can get access to our beta pricing with plans that start at just $39 a year at bnbping.com. Again, that's bnbping.com. You know, one of the cool things that I see just happening more broadly in the industry is you see these incredible, you know, operators and entrepreneurs who figured out, hey, how do I build a portfolio of 10, 15, 20, whatever it is, like units. And then once you've done that, it's like, oh, hey, like, what would it be like if I went and did a motel or a hotel? And like, you see these things start popping up. And in some respects, like, it's actually easier. And in other respects, like, it's certainly, you know, more difficult and harder. But, you know, I've heard a lot of people in the space say this is not my term, but like, you know, Ben Wolf from Onera will say things like, you know, if you can host, then you can hotel. And this idea.
No, wait, say like, that again. If you can host, you can hotel.
Yeah. Meaning if you figured out that, like, as a short-term rental guy or gal, right, like, it's not wildly different, right? And in fact, there are economies of scale that exist in the context of like a motel or a hotel that, you know, don't always exist in a portfolio of very different STRs, right?
Correct.
So I think that like this model, we're gonna just see, you know, more and more of this. And I get excited about it because you see like these like typically bootstrapped, you know, raised a little bit of money at some point, entrepreneurs in the hospitality space now coming into an industry that historically has been incredibly capital intensive, and now being able to say, how do I approach a hotel stay, a hotel experience with everything that I've learned about the guest experience mm-hmm. in vacation rental land? And I think at the end of the day, like, guests get a better experience. There are lessons learned that you've been able to apply. It's just another cool asset to have for sure.
Yep.
But at the same time, what's really, really neat is I think you've learned a lot already, that the actual lift in learning is probably a lot less than your average person might think. So I'm excited about this. This is going to be big for you guys. Is it also in Lancaster or whereabouts is it?
It's about 45 minutes from my house, actually.
Okay. Wow. Yep. Amazing. Well, we're almost at time here, but I just want to ask you like a couple of final questions, Elam. So number one is just what, like, as you think about the future, as you think about the space, like, you're about to get this, you know, motel and transform this piece of crap into another piece of gold. And that seems to be sort of like your brand, which is really cool.
It really is. It really is.
What are like, and that's obviously like a next big thing, but like where do you see yourself in the next few years? Like,
yeah.
If you were to zoom out and like vision cast, like, where are you? Where's the business in, you know, 5 years from now?
Yeah. Yeah. And well, recently, so I had this idea of continuing to build the company and then hiring people once we can afford them.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we're talking about all the great things and the level of success that I've had. Ironically, I've seen this over and over, or maybe I'm different, I don't know, but there's a major level of insecurity.
Yeah.
You know, and I just told my wife this morning, it's like, I struggle with like fear of going bankrupt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and there's parts of our business right now where it's like, I feel like we're over leveraged.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
there's things like that I want to change. And I'm like, I know where we want to go, okay, so I'll just work harder. Well, that hasn't worked the last year or two. I mean, sure, we had a level of growth, but it's like, we're not near where we could be. So right now I'm actually interviewing for positions in the company. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm just going to pull the trigger. And my pitch to these people that I'm looking to hire is like, look, and a little bit higher level in the company.
Yeah.
Look, I'll bring you on, figure out how to pay for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's the type of people that I'm attracting right now. And it's like we literally had one person recently. I interviewed her the other day, and a very reserved person. I was very impressed. Very reserved person. She reached out to me directly saying, hey, can I get this job? And then I'm interviewing her. What I found impressive, reserved people tend not to reach out near as much. Very reserved person reached out to me. And then in the interview process, I figured out that she had researched our company extensively.
Wow.
Like she wants,
wow.
There's something about the vision that we have that's attracting her. And so here's some of the vision. And here's something very unique about that I haven't heard anyone else talk about. So hospitality is often thought as a bed, maybe breakfast, and now more and more recently, kind of a unique experience.
Yeah.
But that itself is even kind of getting a worn out phrase. Like all serious Airbnb operators, and I say Airbnb because I see it mostly more like on Airbnb itself. It's like, hey, we're here to give you a good experience. Everyone's saying it.
Yeah.
Your little mom and pops. And it's great. I admire it. But I'm like, but what does that mean? And what can we do? So we often think of a bed, breakfast, great experience. But that's catering more to our physicality. Mm. But we're so much more than our physicality. We have we have a soul, you know. Yeah. And that soul can mean different things to different people. But what I mean by soul is you have mind, you have will, and emotions. It is who you are. So for myself personally, you know, talk about working hard. I grew up working hard. And when I wasn't working, I felt guilty. Mm. After I left the Amish, it's like, you know what? I really need to learn how to step away, get in the quiet. Those were difficult. That was very difficult because I wasn't working. I wasn't being productive. So I joined. And this all plays into the story. I joined a couple of friends and we went and hiked the Grand Canyon. We're hiking down the Grand Canyon and the sun shining on the opposing wall, the afternoon sun. Just amazing. So powerful. And the beauty of it gripped me. Mm. And I just felt that guilt that I was experiencing, that just worthlessness feeling just melt away. And it just brought such meaning and love, joy, and peace. Those are the three things that the industry is not addressing, at least not directly. So I am asking the question. So with that experience in the Grand Canyon, beauty. Beauty captured me. And it's like, what can I do with beauty that not only attracts people and sure makes the company money, but actually serves a deeper need more than just our physicality? And our vision in the company, I just kind of wordsmithed this finally a couple of days ago. So our vision is to design a hospitality brand that ignites people's souls. So think of the American soul. I mean, you know, and this isn't by no means political, but there's so much bashing of our presidents right now. There's a disoriented feeling. There's a frustration. There is a little bit of a deadness in our country.
A dryness.
A dryness.
A bitterness.
And just a lot of stuff. So our vision is to design a hospitality brand that reignites, that ignites people's souls. And
that's, I mean, that's, it's, go ahead.
Well, and honestly, the solution for our country is not in politics. It is in small operators, many small operators getting a vision for more than just business. Granted, if we really do this well, I think we're going to have a really good business.
Yeah.
ironically, but yeah. More than business and more than just, hey, here's a bed.
Yeah. 100%. I mean,
nothing wrong with Motel 6. They're serving, but I'm just looking beyond that.
No. And I think what you're getting at too, right, is this whole idea. And like, I think we've seen this over the last several years, really, really emerge in the space is like great design, right? And how, like great design, when you're in a space that is beautifully designed, like Hans Lorai, who's one of my favorite designers in the space, I just had him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He talks about this all the time. It's like, you walk into a space that's well designed and all of a sudden, like you feel lighter, you feel inspired, you feel happier, you feel whatever the emotion is that the designer is looking to, you know, to inspire, to facilitate. And it's so hard to articulate like why you feel this way.
Yep.
Right. And and yet it's like, oh, well, you feel this way actually because there was a lot of intention poured into the experience of you walking in, the level of the lighting, the music, the scent, like all those things, right, factor into how you you walk into the space, how you feel. And at the end of the day, how you feel, if you can change the way somebody or interrupt the way that somebody feels, then all of a sudden they're in a position where they could possibly feel something else, right? Like they could take that anger that they felt and they walk through the room and it's beautiful and there's a gorgeous scent and like there's candlelight everywhere, and all of a sudden that anger, it's less strong, it's less powerful. Yep. Right. Yep. And now you're in a position, now you're in a frame to think a little bit differently, to have that conversation with your spouse or your significant other that like diffuse, like you're angry before, you get into the restaurant, you sit down, that, you know, the candlelight is on, you get a glass of wine, and all of a sudden you calm down and you can have a reasonable conversation. You can reconnect. And I think
for me, it was anger within or anger at myself, but
yeah,
totally on track here.
And great design can diffuse that. Great experience can diffuse that. And so I think that your mission is spot on, and quite frankly is exactly what the world needs right now. I think it's beautiful. So Elam, we are at time now, but I just wanted, like, where do folks go to like connect with you? Like, you're a very inspiring individual.
Thank you.
You've got a really cool story. You're building something great. If folks are interested in partnering and or just learning more, or hey, maybe if they're even local, like potentially, you know, working for you, where is the best way to reach you?
Yeah. So facebook.com/ Elam Z King.
Wonderful. Okay. I'll go ahead and drop that in the show notes as well. So people can just click on that. And then is your website, kingleyvacay.com? Is that the best way for folks to get a look at that too?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We're actually in the process of a rebrand, kind of encapsulating some of this, what we actually talked about. You can also go to rewonder.com. It redirects you currently, but we need to implement more of that. But that's so rewonder, just wonder again, re-aliven your soul, you know.
That's a wonderful name. Wonderful name. So, I really, really like that, man. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time. We'll have links to your Facebook in the show notes below. So if you want to go connect with Elam and learn a little bit more about what he and the team are up to, please do so. Sir, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for sharing your story with us.
And to be very clear on the to connecting with us, we're looking to partner with people, both as investors. Hey, we have deals coming up. We're going to bring in investors. And secondly, look, if you have a property, we're willing to manage it.
Yeah, amazing. So, amazing. I love it, dude. So lots of ways to potentially partner. Yep. But thank you for such a great conversation. I'm leaving this inspired and excited about the work that you're doing.
Me too. Thank you, Zach. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Behind the Stays. I'd love to know what you thought of the episode. Feel free to shoot me an email directly at Zach, that's Z-A-C-H, at spontaneous.com, or find me on X, formerly Twitter, at ZBoozy, that's Z-B-O-O-Z-E-E, or on LinkedIn at Zach Boozy Cruz. If this is your first time tuning in, it's a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you back again soon. If you've been a listener for a while, though, I'd greatly appreciate if you could subscribe and then leave us a rating and review of the show wherever you are currently streaming this podcast. Last but certainly not least, Spontaneous and Behind the Stays are totally bootstrapped, and my ability to bring you these stories is only possible because of our incredible advertising partners. We're very much a startup show, and while our growth rate is amazing, thanks to all you who keep tuning in and sharing our show with your friends and family, we haven't quote unquote made it yet. So if you could do me a huge favor and go and check out the sponsor for today's episode in the show notes below, I would greatly appreciate it. Even if their offering doesn't make sense for you right now, sending them a quick message on social or an email, just saying that you're listening to the show and you appreciate their support would be incredibly amazing. All right, friends, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you on the next episode of Behind the Stays.